You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today we are diving into actual basketball game action. I can't believe it. We're talking about games and a little bit of free agency, of course, blending everybody's two favorite things. I hope games are your favorite part. Pacers played two summer league games, and what we're really talking about today is Benedict Mathurin's debut, the highest pick for the Pacers in three decades, deserves a lot of coverage. Talk about his first two games with the Pacers, what his role has been, what he's done well, what he can improve on for the rest of summer league, and what this experience is going to mean to him. The rest of the Pacers have played as well. Chris Duarte, Isaiah Jackson, Dwayne Washington, Terry Taylor, Kendall Brown, Andrew Nembhard, a ton of important names to keep an eye on for the Pacers have also played in these summer league games. Talk about their performances and the team in general. At the end, the Brogdon trade is official. Terry Taylor's contract has sort of a status update. So there's still some Pacers free agency topics to discuss and where the team is at with their cap space, because everybody's talking about DeAndre Ayton. We'll squeeze that in again in the last segment here, although that is going to sound a lot like last Friday's show with Scott Agnes. If you want the latest free agency news, that is still a very relevant episode, I might add. Let's just start with what everybody wants to know about, though. Benedict Mathurin, Pacers debut in summer league action. Couldn't have started better, given what his role was. Dominating against the Charlotte Hornets on Saturday, or excuse me, on Friday. 23 points in his summer league debut, led all scorers for both teams in that game. 9 buckets in that game, 4 rebounds and a steal. Looked quite good in that game. Looked like a little bit like Chris Duarte's first summer league game. Also a little bit like Aaron Holiday's first summer league game. I think he had 25 in his first game. But summer league games are fun, and he was fun and good and exciting. 15 points against the Kings earlier today. Through two games, Duarte currently averaging 19 points per game, 3.5 rebounds, 0.5 assists per game on 46.8. 40 and 57 splits. So shooting very well from three, 50% from inside the arc. Just not getting the free throws to fall so far. But good stats, blending in players so far, and has had quite a nice first two games for the Pacers. And I think it's kind of fitting to discuss what his role has been and how he's played, to talk about the very first play for both games for the Pacers. They ran a Spain pick and roll with Andrew Nembhard, Chris Duarte, and Isaiah Jackson. A Spain pick and roll, for those who are unaware. The normal pick and roll happens where Isaiah Jackson screens for Andrew Nembhard, and then Chris Duarte is the third guy. He comes up from the baseline and screens the big man guarding Isaiah Jackson so that he can't recover and guard the roll man. So it's kind of just difficult for everybody to remember who their assignment is really quickly. So usually the other team, the defending team, will send in a fourth player to try to clog it all up so there's not an easy lob. And on both in both games, Benedict Mathurin was being guarded by that fourth man, and he hit a wide open wing three in both games. He hit a three to open both games for the Pacers, and that is where he has looked the best to me so far, is as a movement shooter. 40% from three, obviously impressive. He looked good as a shooter at Arizona as well. He hit 3 threes in his first game, 3 for 6 from deep, and then in the second game against the Kings earlier today, he only hit 1 of 4, but that's where he's looked the best to me, is off the ball, getting open or squeezing his way into space to be able to get open and knock down a three ball. That is where he's looked the best so far, and that's kind of emblematic of what his role's been in these couple games with the Pacers so far. He's had the ball a lot. I don't want to be like he's been, you know, exclusively like a movement shooter, but he's definitely been more off ball than on ball so far, and I think that's kind of what the Pacers are going to ease him into right now, especially on this team that has Duarte, that has Dwayne Washington, that has Andrew Nembhard on it, guys who should have the ball. You know, those guys have had it more. Mathurin's had it and has had to create, but most of his role so far has been off ball. And that's what I predicted. If you listen to the Summer League Primer last Thursday, is at first when the Pacers are playing everybody, you're going to see what Mathurin looks like off the ball, how he can impact the game in that way. And then as they start pulling guys, which Duarte might already be done, we'll talk about that in the second segment, he'll start to get more on-ball touches. And that's exactly what happened in the second game, for example. He shot the same number of shots, but took more two-pointers, went more to the rim, drew more free throws. Like, those are the things you want to see in his development. So he's definitely played more off-ball, I would say, so far, but has gotten on-ball reps as well. And I'd say those on-ball reps have come with mixed results. For example, in some read scenarios, he's looked really good. He had a really, really nice lob for his only assist so far of all of Summer League, which it does a terrible – the assist stat has done a terrible job of talking about what he's done in terms of Reed so far. But his only assist was a sick lob to Isaiah Jackson against the Kings earlier today coming around a screen. And that's what's mostly been the case when he has the ball. He had one nice layup against the Hornets where late shot clock he dribbled between two defenders and then finished over a big. That was really impressive too. But I would say most of his on-ball reps so far have been coming around a screen and trying to figure out what to do from there. For example, his first two-point bucket against the Kings earlier today, elbow jumper, he came around a screen, one dribble with his left hand and drilled it. Like that kind of stuff. You saw that at Arizona. It felt a little forced at times in college, but that's the kind of shot that he could get to very often and hit at a high enough clip to keep taking them. He drilled one earlier today. And so most of his on-ball reps have been like dribble around a screen and see what you can do. And sometimes he gets cut off and just resets or gives it to a different guard, and sometimes he takes it all the way to the rim. And again, he's hitting 50% of his two-pointer so far. You'll take that. That's solid enough, especially if you're hitting your threes and drawing defenders out to the three-point line. Some tough finishes. He's not really going through or banging with contact yet. He's had some nice end ones, but mostly going over the top of bigs, which is fine. He's making the layups. It's not been a problem or anything. It's just an observation so far on how he's finishing, how he's getting around, you know, to the basket. But not a lot of read scenarios. You know, mostly Andrew Nembhard's been the guy who's kind of, okay, set up a play, get into the paint, make a read. Or Dwayne Washington did that a little bit in this second game against the Kings since he started with Duarte out. You know, they haven't really had Ben Mather and be like, all right, there's pressure on you, read the defense, make a play. Sometimes he has. I'm not saying it's never happened, but that has not necessarily been his role. And that kind of stuff will be the third and fourth and fifth game sort of evaluations. I think they're going to start pivoting to him more on the ball in a minute. But that pull-up jumper, you know, from the right elbow when he came from the right wing that I talked about a second ago with a left-handed dribble. That's the kind of stuff I want to see more of from him, right? Get around a screen, get into the lane, and try to find your shot, even if it's not at the rim. I don't care if he misses 10 mid-rangers the next game the Pacers play. Those are the kind of reps I want to see him develop and learn those counters and learn what to do coming around a screen with the ball. I think a lot of those will be helpful for him. And he mostly is looking to shoot in general coming around screens anyway. Like I said, only one assist through two games. Not a problem, just a stat. You know, I just would like to see what he can do in those situations instead of resetting more, even if it's kind of an awkward shot. Just practice those, you know, looks. See what you can get if you're Benedict Mather. And defense also exists. I've talked mostly about offense for the last six, 7.5 minutes, whatever it's been. His defense has been fine. It's kind of weird assessing the Pacers' defense so far, because I had a note in their first and second game, and it was almost verbatim, which is funny because I didn't remember typing the first one, that it just felt like a lot of the Pacers' defensive mistakes were like the whole team was a step away from where they're supposed to be standing. Like they were too close to the ball. And Mathurin was definitely guilty of this as well. His off-ball D, he was a little too close to the action sometimes, and that left a cutter open behind him or a shooter open away from him. But in general, I thought his on-ball defense was fine. The Hornets' two starting guards, for example, Bryce McGowan shot 6 for 13. Jalen Crutcher was 2 for 11. Tyshawn Alexander off the bench was 2 for 6. Like, they had some struggling guards. In that game, the Kings in the second game, Keon Ellis was 3 for 10. Frankie Ferrari was awesome to start that game. He had 4 threes and like 2 or 3 of them in the first quarter. But in general, he wasn't even good. When he was guarded by Mather and wasn't scoring but didn't do that well. Matt Coleman was 1 for 5, right? Like, his on-ball defense has been fine. His off-ball defense and team defense, which if you actually listen to my scouting of Benedict Mather and podcast with Leif Thulin, this was one of the things I thought was something you really have to work on, is that off-ball defense kind of stuff. That's where he needs a little bit of growth to me, is standing in the right spots, not being too close to the play, remembering where his man is, keeping an eye, head on a swivel, kind of not like basic level stuff. I don't want to call it simple. It's NBA basketball, but just stuff that you need to have iron into your head at all times, especially playing at this level when most players playing can score from anywhere at any time. So on defense, better on ball than off ball so far, and I think he will continue to grow in both areas as he plays in more than two games. But look, summer league doesn't matter, right? Like, it's a good growth tool for these guys. It's a good evaluation step. But the wins and losses don't matter. The skill development is what matters. And the skill development that we won't see, and something I want to talk about here, is a lot of growth that will come for Benedict Mathurin is from a teammate perspective, right? Like, he is going from Arizona, where he was the dude, or every time they played, he and Koloko and a couple others were like obviously best players on the floor. Now, Keegan Murray is better than him. Chris Duarte is better than him. You know, Mark Williams on his day could be, although he wasn't when they played the Hornets. You know, Isaiah Jackson should be at this stage. You know, those guys are better than him. He's not the guy. He'll learn to be a teammate, whether that's an off-court leader, how to slot himself in on the ball, all that sort of stuff. That's where I think a lot of growth will happen for him in Summer League as well. And we won't be able to see that, but when I can interview him again, because I'm not in Vegas, that will become more apparent. And that is where a lot of the Summer League value comes in for these rookies. So he'll get the on-ball reps in future games. He'll get to work on his defense more. The whole team will. The whole Pacers defensive system grossness has not been awesome so far. Like, if the Hornets didn't shoot terrible from three in the first game, their results would not have been awesome. I don't care if they win and lose in Summer League. They won the first game and lost the second. That doesn't matter. What matters is how the players look. And Ben Mathurin, mostly good so far, I would say. I would say his first two games have been at or above expectation for the Pacers so far. And they have to be happy, especially with the off-ball shooting, with how he's been able to play. And having an on-ball D and three role, that seems great as a floor heading in for a rookie through two games of Summer League. That the rest of the team has also played. There is more players on this Pacers squad than just Benedict Mathurin, obviously. Let's talk about the rest of those guys, how they looked through two games. Then at the end, of course, we'll talk about the Brogdon trade becoming official, where the Pacers stand as a team now, Terry Taylor, lots of stuff on the roster front. Really quickly, though, before we talk about the rest of the guys at Summer League, I want to talk to you guys about BetOnline.net, your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's NHL playoffs and Major League Baseball, all over at BetOnline.net. They also have Summer League. They're your continued source for all your sports wagering information with live betting, esports, and scores. Those Summer League odds are up there right now. The only one I can see, because they don't put up the games until the day of, because it's not always clear who's playing, stuff like that, is Hornets-Lakers, which starts in about 5 minutes for me. The Hornets currently favored by 1.5 over that Lakers team. Lakers Summer League squad, not very good, but I did see the Hornets struggle against the Pacers. That's an interesting one. You can see all those lines, including the Pacers game on Tuesday, at betonline.net, which remains your best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. They're the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports scores and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action. BetOnline.net is where the game starts. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, I'm going to suggest Locked On Kings, mostly because I just watched the Kings play the Pacers earlier, and Matt George from Locked On Kings, who's been on here several times, talked about how Keegan Murray's looked and how that Kings squad has been playing so far in Summer League. Let's talk about the rest of the Pacers, speaking of Summer League, and a first little update about a guy who hasn't played a second but is still important to the Pacers ecosystem out there in Vegas, Aaron Nesmith. If you watched the first game, Pacers Hornets on Friday, that was before the trade was official, and yet you could see Aaron Nesmith sitting with Pacers players during the game. He was sitting with Jalen Smith, Tyrese Haliburton, and I think O'Shea Brissett was the third guy during the game. I mean, the trade, it wasn't official yet, but everybody knew it was happening. So Nesmith and his Pacers teammates are already getting to know each other a little bit. Trade did become official Saturday, and then, of course, the question is, will he play in Summer League or not? You know, the trade is complete. How the status of that stuff all works out, though, is more than just has the trade been called into the league. So we'll see. James Boyd, the Indy star who's there, had a source tell him. He tweeted out that maybe Nesmith will be playing in Summer League, which is not really helpful for me to explain to you on this podcast setting, but I think that's kind of a hard maybe. I wouldn't say I have more or less confidence than 50%, but I would probably lean like 40% if I had to make a number. I just totally said something and then contradicted myself, but I'd say there's like a 40% chance he plays in Summer League as of now. But he is there. He's with the team. He can still practice with them, get shots up. He just maybe won't play in games. We'll see, though. It's possible that he does end up playing out there. So let's talk about the guys who have played and the headliner for me, the important one, too, Chris Duarte. Chris Duarte in the first Pacers game they played against the Hornets looked like the best player on the court by a mile. 16 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, no turnovers, plus 25. They dominated with him in the game. Drilled a 3-pointer as well. Beautiful off the backboard assist to Ben Mathurin, the highlight of Summer League so far. Why does this matter? Well, one, it's good when young players get better. If you'll remember back to last Summer League, O'Shea Brissett tightened his handle, looked a lot better, and all of a sudden, he got pulled after two games. Pacers were like, you're too good for Summer League. Duarte looked way too good for Summer League in one game. His handle looked better. His shot looked fine. He was getting guys on his hip and pick and rolls with the ball in his hands. You know, he didn't just look like a 3-and-D guy like he was for a lot of last season. That's not exactly what he was last season, but that was part of it. He looked a lot better than that. He could get to the rim and put pressure on the defense. And let me tell you the one stat that I'm going to use to talk about Chris Duarte's Summer League so far. In the only game he played, 9 free throw attempts. 9 free throw attempts. Chris Duarte got to the line. That is not what you thought of him as a player last year. It is summer league. Caveats abound. But that is a very good sight to see if you're the Pacers. If he's a guy who can even get by anybody going around a screen or off the dribble at all with no screen, I mean, that drastically changes his evaluation. I'm not saying he's going to be that guy, but getting 9 free throws is better than getting 0 free throws in a summer league setting. He hit all 9, ended up with 16 points on 7 shot attempts. That is miraculously efficient. He played very well. He looked like the best player on the floor. He looked too good for summer league, which is always important for your rookie to have. So that's great news for the Pacers. And then in game 2, he didn't play. He sat in street clothes, and that might mean he's just done. You know, he had this toe injury bugging him when they showed up, but James Boyd, who I referenced for my Neesmith thing just a second ago, reported that that's not why he didn't play. The toe had nothing to do with him sitting out that second game of summer league. They thought he looked good. Why play him? There's no point, especially if he is dealing with something potentially nagging. They sat him out. There's a chance, I don't know this, but I would say if they're sitting him out already, then he might just be done. They might just be like, yep, all right, practice with the team, but there's no point of putting you through this. He looked fantastic, and that's exactly what the Pacers will hope to see. And in general, most of the NBA dudes look good, but I mean, Duarte looked good on both ends. I'll give all the other NBA guys a good note and a bad note. Terry Taylor, who again, we'll talk about next segment, looked like the rebound dude that we know Terry Taylor to be. 3 offensive boards and 7 boards total in that first game with 11 points plus 25 was tied for a team high. In the second game against the Kings, he led the Pacers in scoring with 16 points on 5 of 8 shooting, and he had 8 free throw attempts, right? That's generally a good sign. You're shooting good shots around the basket, drawing fouls. He had 4 offensive rebounds in that game, 7 total. Again, was probably the best starter for the Pacers in that game. Those situations, he's looked good. He's looked like Terry. The scoring has been nice to see. As well, he really struggled defensively on some possessions guarding Keegan Murray, right? That is where he will need to grow as a player. Obviously, if he wants to play the 4 a lot more than the 5, is keeping up with some of these perimeter guys. And Keegan Murray, in general, cooked the Pacers down the stretch of that game. He had 23 points, hit 4 threes. He just looked like a nice player. There's a reason he was drafted as high as he was. Dwayne Washington, driving looks good, getting guys on his hip, playing a little more of a point guardy role than he did last year. Shot is definitely not falling for him so far. 3 for 12. In the first game, I believe 3 for 10 in the second game when he started, 3 for 8, excuse me, when he started in place of Chris Duarte, who set out that game. So looks good driving. The handle looks better. The shot is not falling as he tries more on-ball plays. The defense and the finishing, like I just mentioned, still a little bit off. Still a little ways to go for him in that area. But he has played basically a full NBA season with the Pacers. I'm not worried about the shot falling. That is the assessment of him so far. Isaiah Jackson, I was a little off here. I thought he would look like the best player on the Pacers in the setting, given his tools and his skill set. That was definitely Duarte. Not that Isaiah Jackson's looked bad. He's averaging 8 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 blocks. Athleticism on full display, flying up and down the court. But he struggled with his handle a little bit. His shot hasn't really been there outside of right around the basket. He's 3 for 10 in the first game from the field, 3 for 6 in the second game. So that's like 8. He's like 6 for 16. That's not a bad thing necessarily because he's taking longer shots than he will mostly in the NBA. He really struggled in the second game, though, with Nemias Keita, a big man for the Sacramento Kings, who I think was on a 2-way for them at times last year. He finished with 12, 7, and 4 blocks, Keita did. Plus 23, dominated the Pacers. He was strong on the glass. He was strong with the ball. And Isaiah Jackson struggled with him. And I think that's somewhere that, Jackson has looked good, but he's been the guy that I think, compared to expectation of the NBA guys, has looked the lowest for me because he still can't quite hang with those stronger fives in the post. And that, for his NBA projection, means he probably either has to be a backup big or play more 4 this coming season. Again, I'm overreacting to summer league, certainly, but that is definitely noteworthy for him, despite him playing very well in certain areas, finishing some lobs. And his block early in the Kings game was insane. His hand was like 3/4 of the way up the backboard for this block. So still looks good. But definitely has some stuff to work on. Non-NBA division of guys I want to talk about. First up, look, stats maybe don't show it. A lot of turnovers in the Pacers' second game. I love Andrew Nembhard. He is my summer league crush this year. I get one every single year. Last year, ironically, it was Dwayne Washington. 2 years ago, what was his name? He ended up playing for the Nuggets on a 10-day. I'll have to look it up and maybe put it in the description of the show. Derek Kramer at iPacers blog, I remember. Might remember. Anywho, this year, it's definitely Nembhard. He looks faster with the ball than I expected. So composed coming around screens. Can really read where his teammates are, where players are in traffic. Good on defense with the steals. Like, his read of the game looks really, really high level. And that's really important for point guards, obviously, but especially a rookie to already be at that level. That is great to see. right? The board rebounds are there. The shot is fine. The speed with the ball is more than I thought. Just very composed and slithery. So, yes, a few sloppy turnovers. Definitely something he'll have to work on, especially as a point guard. But I've been very impressed with what he's been able to do so far. He is definitely one of my favorites to watch in this team so far. Kendall Brown, the other second-round pick, he's fast and athletic, as advertised. Hasn't really shown much outside of those skills, which isn't good or bad. Playing within your role is completely fine, and he's had some nice plays, including a nice shot fake to run a guy off the three-point line before finishing an and-one at the basket. That's all the NBA guys. Some other notes in general. Gabe York finished last season on a two-way for the Pacers. Has really struggled so far. I mean, he's mostly just come in as a shot guy. He's been the backup point guard. 4 assists in the first game, for example, which is good. Actually, he had 4 assists in both games. Shot hasn't been falling. His penetration's not been there, kind of settling for jumpers. Would like to see a little more from him. Simi Shittu has looked really good. He played in both games as the backup five. Only didn't play too much in the first game, but has played in both. Was really good against the Kings. Was their leading scorer at halftime. Finished that game with 8 points and 7 rebounds. 4 for 5 from the field. Plus 21. Pacers bench was very good in that game. Simi Shittu, a big reason why. If the Pacers, for some reason, wind up in a spot this season where they need another big, that sounds funny, but remember, they needed Amita Brima 2 seasons ago. Maybe they would bring him in on a two-way. He's looked pretty good so far. Fan Bojang, the Chinese wing from the G League Ignite, looked up and down in his first performance. He's the only Exhibit 10 guy to play, which is noteworthy for roster and two-way battles. He did not play against the Kings. None of the Exhibit 10 guys have played at all, except for Zhang in that first game, who finished with 4 points and 2 steals. Last guy I want to talk about, a guy who had, he's only played in one game, but I think I'm going to be keeping an eye on him for different reasons. David DeLeo. David DeLeo did not play in the Pacers' first game, but he did play 13 minutes in the second game. He had 8 points. He was plus 9. He had 2 assists in 13 minutes. Why am I talking about David DeLeo? David DeLeo can shoot it. He was 3 of 6 from deep in that game that he played in, and that is his thing. He's a shooter. In 2 seasons ago, he played in Spain in 2020-21. 37% from deep on over 5 attempts per game. Last season, he played in Greece for PAOK, 39% on 5 attempts per game. He's a wing-sized player. You know, that doesn't mean a lot to most teams, but the Pacers, who have none of these guys, there's a 6'8 guy on their summer league team who can really shoot it. I have no idea what his defense projects to be on an NBA level. I have no idea what the Pacers think of him and where he could end up on their roster, if at all. But that seems like a guy you'd sniff around a two-way for. If you have a 6'8 guy who can shoot threes in your orbit, I would think about trying to keep him around in some way, shape, or form. That's my dispatch from 2 summer league games. We'll continue to cover these as they happen. The next one is Tuesday night, so Wednesday's show we'll talk more about Mathurin and the gang as this stuff continues to develop out in Vegas. Let's pivot back to free agency, though, really quickly. Brogdon trades official. Terry Taylor's contract has a small update to share with everybody. We'll talk about all that to close up the show today. Before we do that, though, let's talk about rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of vehicles, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts that you need. You go in there, you got to figure out and find in the huge shop where what you need is. You can never find it. It's always in the aisle that you don't expect. This has happened to me very recently. Then you got to deal with the questioning about the exact specs of your vehicle. Then they just order it to their warehouse. That's annoying. You have to go back and get it. You don't have to do any of that. Go to rockauto.com on your computer or on your phone in your pocket and save time and money. They have cheaper prices. It's way more convenient. You can save time and money. Who doesn't love both of those resources? They're a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Their prices are always reliable, though, for every customer, and they have everything you could need for your vehicle. Brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, new carpet, you name it, they got it. Explore their easy-to-use website today at rockauto.com to find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck right locked on in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliable low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, Locked On NBA is the way to go to hear a good combined coverage of both Summer League and free agency. And spoiler, I am on there on today's episode talking with Jackson Gatlin about, you'll never believe this, the Indiana Pacers. Speaking of the Pacers, free agency is still raging on. We're 10 days in now, 11 days in now. Still stuff's going to happen for every team, Durant and Irving not settled. So there's going to be free agency coverage for a while. There's still stuff the Pacers could, in theory, do. But what did happen this weekend? 2 things. One, Sunday, me talking right now, it's 9:41 p.m. on July 10th. That is the day that Terry Taylor's contract guarantees. Terry Taylor's deal, by the time you're listening, will almost certainly have become fully guaranteed. I suppose in the next 2 hours that could change. But I had a league source tell me on Saturday that his contract will be fully guaranteed this coming season. So Terry Taylor's contract guaranteed over the weekend. He'll make the minimum salary for him this season, $1.6 million, given the contract he signed last season. Congrats to him. He earned it. Quite the path. Undrafted, takes the Exhibit 10 to get into camp, kills it in the G League, gets the two-way, gets the promotion at the end of the season. A lot of times with those guys, it takes some crazy circumstance, like a bunch of injuries like the Pacers had, or dominating in the G League to get noticed. He did both, and to get to where he is now. Great story. He earned it. And now his deal is guaranteed, which doesn't mean a ton for the Pacers. He already had $625,000 guaranteed before Sunday. So the Pacers don't, you know, they only would have gained like 900 something thousand by waiving him, which is less than league minimum. There was no reason to waive him. He was probably going to make the team anyway. But now that is official unless something very, 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 very drastic happens in the next 2 hours and 18 minutes. That is the minor note of note for the Pacers this season. The more major one, obviously, the Malcolm Brogdon trade is official. It could not happen until the 9th. That was Saturday. That's when it did happen at about 4:45 p.m. As reported, Brogdon to the Celtics. No changes to anything reported. Coming back to the Pacers, Malik Fitz came to the Pacers. Nick Stauskas, Juwan Morgan, Aaron Nesmith, Daniel Tice, and that 2023 first-round pick come to Indiana. Nesmith sitting with the Pacers players at Summer League, obviously getting some shots up with the guys. That was the tip that this was obviously going to happen anyway, but there we go. You've seen Nesmith with the Pacers now. So what does this mean officially now that those two things, Terry Taylor's contract becoming guaranteed and Malcolm Brogdon trade being official, what does that mean for the Pacers' current situation? And I have to talk about Ayton for a few seconds because that's what everybody wants to hear about. So there is a chance, it's very complicated to explain, but I'll keep it surface level. There's a chance the Pacers did this trade as an over-the-cap team and created a very large trade exception in this trade, about over $18 million. So they could still be an over-the-cap team if they kept the cap holds for Stevenson, Hinton, and York, as well as holds for mid-level exceptions and trade exceptions, including a big one they got for Brogdon in this trade of about $18.6 something million. I don't have Excel in front of me right now. So they are, if they did do it that way, which if I were in charge of the Pacers, that's what I would have done, they would probably be over the cap right now by about $17 million. But they have, again, as I've tried to explain many times in this show, the ability to cut all their cap holds at any time at the drop of a hat. They just renounce them, and then they go under the cap. So what is their max cap space? That's what everybody's asking about. The Brogdon trade freed up an extra $4.6 million. And we'll talk about why that number is so specific in a second. So they now have about $26.4 million in cap space. That is not enough for a max contract for any player in the league, but that is their maximum cap space right now before signing Nembhard, before signing Kendall Brown, and with some light guarantees for some other guys. So the least amount of salary the Pacers could have taken back in this trade was $18 million on the dot. And if they had fully guaranteed all three of the contracts of Malik Fitz, Juwan Morgan, and Nick Stauskas, they'd have taken back something like $18.26 million in salaries. So none of those three guys got their deal fully guaranteed, but mostly guaranteed. All of them got about $86,000 less than their fully guaranteed amount to make this contract work. That reporting from Luke Adams of Hoops Rumors. That doesn't mean a ton for the Pacers. That does save them $260,000 of cap space, which is nice. If they waive those guys, they save that money, or they could trade them for a different team's minimum salary guy and help that team save $86,000. Not that, again, these are very, very small nuances, but they are important. That extra $250,000 could mean something for the Pacers. So they're not at max cap space, even if they renounce all their cap holds right now. And I would imagine, just knowing what I know about the salary cap, they're technically over the cap right now, although they could get under at the drop of a hat. What does that mean for the Ayton sweepstakes? Everybody wants to know about DeAndre Ayton. Will the Pacers offer him a maximum contract in free agency? Will the Suns match? What's the deal going to be? As of right now, the Pacers do not have max contract space. So if a maximum contract offer sheet to DeAndre Ayton is what it takes to get him, the Pacers currently do not have the resources to do that. They would have to free up about about $4.6 million more of money. If they found a taker for Goga Batadze for no salary in return, they would already have the space to do it. There's other ways to do it. There are other guys like a combination of a $3 million player and a $1.5 million player, or three minimum guys. There are a bunch of ways to free up that space, but the Pacers do not currently have enough to offer Ayton the max. We'll see what happens. This is a big game of chicken, right? The Nets do not want the Pacers to give the offer sheet to Ayton, because presumably, assuming they would like him in a Durant deal as an option. The Suns don't want the Pacers to do the offer sheet, and the Pacers currently don't have the space for it. So it's kind of a big game of chicken. Will the Pacers actually do it? Will this get worked into a deal? Who knows? I have no idea what the Pacers' likes or dislikes about DeAndre Ayton are at this point, but if they would like to get max space to offer him, there are easy ways to do it that don't involve trading away a good player like Miles Turner to get Ayton. But as it stands right now, they do not have enough to offer him a maximum offer sheet. Now, if you tweet at me and ask, Tony, can the Pacers offer DeAndre Ayton a contract right now? Yes, they can offer him a contract at any time, legally. They just can't offer him a max contract right now, which I think is an important distinction in this discussion. So I don't know what the level of interest between the Pacers and Ayton and what the Nets' interest is, and if any other teams are related to this discussion, like the Raptors have reportedly had interest, the Spurs have a ton of cap space. But from a Pacers perspective, they do not currently have maximum space to offer Ayton a maximum deal, and they would have to make a few moves to do that, and that is where things stand with the Pacers on the free agency front right now. The rest of the week, we'll cover some stuff the Pacers could still do in free agency. Of course, be covering the Summer League action and get some guests in to talk about the Pacers offseason in general, which is still incomplete, so hard to grade, but we'll talk about it all because everybody's very interested in where this team is headed going forward. Hope you guys enjoyed this because I got to talk about actual basketball games. I obviously enjoyed it, and we will continue to do that going forward this week. Hope everybody has a great weekend, and we will see you tomorrow.